Blog Talk Radio.
Tuning in Saturday nights at 8 p.m. and taking us with you on downloads. I've noticed a trend here. We do have quite a bit of listeners online during the program itself, but there are also a ton of podcast downloads, either on Stitcher, which is an app that you can get to download the show, or from Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be on iTunes as well, but just be patient. Stick with me. I'm getting that done. It takes a little bit longer to get things done on iTunes. As always, feel free to reach out at BigfootGroundZero at gmail.com, BigfootGroundZero at gmail.com. I can get you in touch with the guests, or if you want to ask me any questions or throw me any insults, those are always fun too. Feel free, not a problem. On tonight's show, I've got Chris Spencer, researcher in Washington, and I've got Shane Corzin, a member of the Olympic Project. Chris is going to be calling in, just doing little bits here and there on the program over the next few weeks. He's in Alaska doing some work on Prince of Wales Island. And if anybody's read that book, Raincoast Sasquatch by Robert Alley, a majority of the sightings, or at least the most interesting sightings, have come from that island. It's huge. It's mostly uninhabited and maybe uninhabitable. So I'm not sure how much encroachment there will be on that habitat. Hopefully Chris gets some things. You know, he sent me some tree knocks and that sort of thing already. I'm going to try to amplify those so we can get those across audibly for radio to make it more interesting. But in any case, Chris is going to talk about Alaska itself. It's his first time there, so he's really excited. You can hear it in his voice, and it's going to be a good time. So I've got him for about 10 minutes here coming up shortly. And then after that, Shane Corzin is going to be talking to me about his experience, his sighting out in the Mountain Hood area a few years ago, and it got him started in the whole Bigfoot research thing. He knew what Bigfoot was, or Sasquatch, you know, relative to stories and other sightings and people's reports, but obviously when you've got this this Class A experience, you're going to get into things a little bit more, so he spends as much time in the field as he can. We have a conversation about research. He imparts a lot of wisdom about just being out in the field, being prepared, but also what to do when you think you've got evidence and when are the best times to look and the whole nine yards. We will actually play some audio, and I love doing this, but we're going to compare side by side. We're going to A and B some sounds that gorillas make to sounds that Chris, David Ellis, and company at Olympic Project have recorded in a specific research area. Now, the sounds are compelling. Even if you're not a Sasquatch, quote-unquote, believer, it'll give you room to pause, you know, and thought for pause, because when you hear one against the other, these sounds, one being a gorilla, the other being this other whatever it is, the two are pretty damn close. So I don't want to lead you too much in a direction and give you that bias, but at the same time, I want you to be excited about it. So let's go ahead and talk to Chris. On the backside of that, we'll introduce the Shane interview, and following that, we will do a comparison of the gorilla sounds that they found and known sounds that there are out there. All right, thanks so much, and we'll see you on the other side. Hey, man, thanks for talking to us tonight. How you doing?
I'm tired.
I can only imagine. So what are you doing for your day job before you actually get into squatching in the evenings and on the weekend?
We're working 12, 6-12s on a barge. We're replacing, reinforcing the hull. We're replacing a bunch of structural stuff to the hull to try to keep it from sinking.
Oh, great. I wouldn't climb in there and do that, but God bless you. At least you have a good backdrop.
No,
go ahead.
Yeah, it's not a lot of fun.
No. But you had a good backdrop, and you've got an opportunity to do some things. I know you were super excited. We had spoken a number of times about you going out and actually doing some research, and I promised the audience we'd get at least a couple of conversations with you. So I appreciate you taking the time. Let's do this. For those who've never been to Alaska, as brief as you can, what's it like? You step off the plane, bam, there you are.
Well, I'm in southeast Alaska on Prince of Wales Island, and all I can say is it's beautiful. I've never been to a place like this before. It's all hemlock and cedar. The hike we did today, we got up into some pine. When we first got here, it was raining, but even in the rain with the mist and the clouds, and the island is mountainous. It's just primeval. It's thick, and it's just gorgeous. The animals are everywhere. Saw two bear today. Saw our first, it took us almost 12 hours to get here after a ferry ride from Ketchikan. We had a 3-hour drive from Hoyce to the actual camp I'm at. And on that drive, I don't know, we saw over 100 deer, Sitka, blacktail. And just as we get into camp, a bear jumps out in the middle of the road in the dark, is running down in the road in front of the headlights. Seen sea otters swimming around the barge all day, fish all around the barge. It's just mink run all over the shore. It's unreal. It's just freaking cool. I haven't seen a wolf yet, but we found scat today, a lot of wolf scat up in the hill. We climbed the mountain up behind the camp, and we found a lot of wolf scat, a lot of bear scat. And like I said, we ran into this sow, and she was all of 300 pounds and more. And she had I'm guessing it's one of her young, but it's not a cub anymore. It was easily a 200-pound bear. Saw them twice, and they were she was sitting in the road on her butt, and she was all 5 feet tall sitting on her butt, just staring at us 40 feet away. I got pictures of her, but I couldn't get my camera going fast enough before she started walking away. Dude, it's phenomenal up here. It's
nice.
Just beautiful.
When you said you're taking a picture of the bear and you couldn't get your camera out fast enough, now you know why nobody gets a picture of Sasquatch, right?
Oh, yeah.
They're probably not even thinking about the camera at that point. But all right, so you and I have had a couple of conversations offline, and you've been getting sounds. Bring us into your world. You know, how are you set up? What are you able to do maybe here that you're not able to do anywhere else? Look, what's the game plan? And then we'll kind of get into some of the activity.
Well, you know, originally I brought my recording equipment because I want to get a recording of wolves. I want to get some, I want to record wolves myself for my own files and stuff. And so Tuesday I put a Tascam out. I only brought one Tascam, but I had limited amount of stuff that I could bring. And I put it down a quarter mile from our camp where we sleep at night. And it was right down on the bay. There's an old rock quarry there, and there's a boat launch right into the bay. And it also happens to be where the cooks throw all the food into the bay because they don't want the bears coming into where we sleep. So that's why that we saw the sound cub today, because it was down in that area. But anyways, put the recorder out, found wolf tracks down there. So I was all pumped that I might get some wolf sounds. I didn't get anything but crows, ravens, and seagulls. And then around 12:30 at night, a lot of percussive sounds until 2:30 in the morning. So
yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised because they're the kind of percussive sounds that me and other researchers find highly suspect. And I can tell you right now, camp is shut down pretty much as everyone's in bed at 9. All mining activities end at 5. Our work ends at 6. The miners get up about 4 to go to. They get up and they start work at 5. We get up at around 5 and start work at 6. So basically the time period that these percussive sounds were occurring was a time period there's no one awake, and the closest town is three hours away. And they're basically rock on rock. I recreated the sound yesterday. I went down with a coworker and I threw rocks against rocks, and he even said that's exactly what you recorded, except what you recorded was a lot louder and a lot stronger. So I don't know. And there was some wood on wood percussive noises. And there was one percussive that me and David Ellis both kind of feel it's done biologically with their mouths. It's like a mouth pop. Mm-hmm. It's like a... Mm-hmm. I got that just before the percussive started. And what was interesting about the percussives, they started in the distance and kind of worked... One worked its way closer to where the recorder was. I would say it was about, just based upon my experiments and what I see on Sonic Visualizer, it was probably just a little over 100 yards, 100, 150 yards tops, but it was probably close to 100 yards to the recorder. And it was, there was distant knocks, and then the whoever was close made the percussive sounds. I shouldn't say knocks, percussives, because I don't know what it is. I'm not saying it was Bigfoot. I'm just saying it's highly suspect because of the area I'm in, the fact there's not the people here that you have down in the lower 48, and I know nobody in this camp was up.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were saying that to me earlier, I'm like, well, could it be otter? And they're clacking like, you know, abalone.
No.
With rock. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of all the things.
Right.
Here's the thing.
Right.
Here's the thing that just really irritates me, because I can't get my mind around it, and because I don't know, I can't definitively say it because I definitively don't know, if that makes sense. But
right.
What else out there in the woods, please tell me, takes a stick and bangs it into a tree? Because all the signatures, or a rock, and I've seen the signatures on Sonic Visualizer. You've shown it to me, David's shown it to me, he's shown what the signature is, you know, historically, you know, with other, whatever, known sounds. I'm trying to put my mind around what the hell could be making those if it isn't a something with opposable thumbs. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's exactly it, Dave. I played it for my boss because I told everybody, I was like, I got some weird stuff, and they're kind of giving me crap. And when I played it for him, he's like, oh, wow. He just goes, oh, wow. What
right.
the hell?
Right.
You know? And I tell you what, today, you know, I walked around the part of our hike. We hiked down a creek down to the shore, and I literally brought back clamshells the size of my hand. There are clams and mussels all around the bay. There's so much food for, I mean, there's a reason there's so many bears on this island, because there's so much food. Well, there's plenty of food for something else, too.
Now, do they eat the same thing? Do you see them down there pulling clams and, you know, that sort of thing?
Or I think the bears that we saw today are eating camp scraps.
That'll do it.
But, yeah, I have no doubt the bears go down and scavenge whatever they can scavenge. You know, like I said, the sea otters are everywhere. They're like, down where I'm from, we have Nutria, and there you see them in all the sloughs. Well, the sea otters are like that up here in the bay. They're freaking everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a harbor seal last night. I think someone's feeding him because he saw us down at the boat ramp, and he started swimming towards us. And Brendan, my coworker, he's like, what's that seal doing? I go, he's looking for something. Someone, he's probably used to getting fed here. And he got close enough and obviously decided we weren't the same person that feeds him and swam off. It's a hard place. It's hard to explain to people, you know. You know, when I get percussive sounds down where my main area is, there's always the back of my mind, I got to think of, well, there might be other freaking Bigfoot researchers out here trying to do stuff, because in the last 2 years, more people are starting to go in my area. I think more people have found out what I'm doing up there. And there's always that human thing you got to be wary of down in Washington, because there's just so many people now. There's not people up here. I mean, we're the only people here. Mm. Whatever did that last Tuesday night, it wasn't anybody in this camp. I mean,
right.
There's no people for 100 miles around.
What's the daylight? What's the daylight hours there right now? Is it daylight longer now, or is it like, how does that?
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty much dark about 11:30. It's dusk from 10:30 to 11 or so. By when the percussives occurred, it was dark. So.
Well, listen,
yeah.
Man. I'll try to keep the segment down. I know you are absolutely beat. Folks, what you can't see is that he and I are actually on video, and I can look at him right now, and he's smoked. Absolutely wiped out. But
had an awesome hike, though.
Well, that's the thing, right? You get Sundays off, part of Saturday, and you get Sundays off, so you got to make it, you know, it's the most out of it that you can. So I totally get that. So, Yeah, man. Let's check in from time to time. I'll throw you on the air here and let folks hear what you're doing. Tootle River Skookum is your Facebook page. Can people still view that? I think it's a closed group, but can they still see?
Okay. It's a closed group.
All
but
right.
I'll send you some pictures and stuff. You can post it on your page.
And I know you're gonna zip me some sounds and that sort of thing. As they come to, and we'll post those tree knocks. And I know you said there were some that were in succession. I'll make sure that we get them so you hear the furthest, then second closest, then the closest, and we'll put it all together. So, man, thanks so much for being on the show tonight, and you can get some sleep, and we'll talk to you later.
Sounds good, man.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris.
Bye bye.
All right, Chris, it's always great to have you on. Definitely appreciate that, and really looking forward to. I'm glad you set the table, actually, for the future reports to come up, because it's always nice to have kind of a background on where folks are coming from. It's nice to hear that, you're almost overwhelmed by the beauty of the place, but also you got right down to business, and you've got trail cams and recorders set out, and you're using your free time to really take advantage. So definitely appreciate the passion, and we're going to look forward to having you on, every week. So let's transfer real quick, transition over to Shane Spencer. Just got to get over to this in the sense of timing for you. But this interview with Shane was really compelling for his sighting, also for his insight on research. And yeah, we got the sounds to compare, kind of A-B, these gorilla or Sasquatch sounds from the originals to what was found in the Olympic Mountains. So let's go ahead and go over to Shane and look forward to this one, and I'll see you guys on the back end of this. All right, we're here with Shane Corson of the Olympic Project. Shane has been doing God's work out in the wild. Some of the things that you and I won't go and do, he and the guys from the OP are definitely out there getting it done. How you doing, Shane?
Doing well, David. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. The first time you and I met, I was probably drunk as a skunk at Sasquatch Summit, so I apologize for anything I might have said, and I don't quite remember what it was, but you also, just for the folks out there listening, Shane was kind enough to, since I was flying from New England, he was kind enough to pretty much hook me up with a tent, a sleeping bag, hell, even a pillow, I think, food, so thanks, brother, thanks, that was awesome. We went out to the public expedition, this last one that they had in the Olympic National Park area. So, yeah, appreciate that, man. I am looking forward to this interview. Let's talk about real quick. I want to do this. I'm not sure how comfortable you are talking about this or not, because you probably told the story 100 times at least. But there's always a beginning to every story about why somebody does something, and yours is an interesting story about an experience that you had when you were hiking and camping alone. And I won't steal the thunder about where it was and that sort of thing, but just kind of bring us into your world about how that started and what you're doing today.
Yeah, quick correction. I was not alone. I was with two other individuals.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Just throw that in there. I've actually been actively researching the subject for over 20 years now, but it wasn't until having moved from Southern California to Oregon and having this encounter did it really, like you mentioned, really brought me into this subject and bringing me into a little, looking at it a little more seriously.
Sure.
So back in, moved up to Oregon in 2008. In 2011, two buddies of mine, two co-workers, went out to the Olympic National Forest. We had searched out a spot a couple of weeks prior to that we could hike into some remote mountain lakes to go fishing. And we wanted to hike in, backpack, camp for a long weekend, and go fishing. We had about four or five lakes picked out. So we end up driving out to this trailhead. And my buddy Mitch and Ian were with me. We hike out to this lake spot, and we set up camp, and then we go looking for some lakes, more lakes, and end up getting lost. We hiked like 17 miles, and I will keep this short because I have told like 100 times, but I think it's relevant because it really launched me into meeting people such as yourself, David, and the Olympic Project, and got me really serious about the research. So anyways, we hiked about 17 miles, and that was not on purpose. We got lost. And finally, we made our way back to where we're camping, where we're going to camp. We were settling in, did some fishing that night, started you know, our usual routine when we go camping. Get a fire, get cooking, eat a meal, talk a little bit, and go to bed. We go to bed about 11:30. There's three of us there, like I said, three different tents right next to the lake. And the three of us, you know, probably fell asleep pretty quickly. We had been hiking out there. So around 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, I started hearing this clanking noise. And I say clanking because it sounded like two rocks being, that's what it sounded like, two rocks being clanked together and getting closer to our camp spot. It sounded distant, and it got closer and closer. My buddy to the left of me, Mitch, woke up and said, "Hey, do you hear that?" Or he was awake, I don't know. Said, "Hey, do you hear that?" I said, yeah, I hear that. So what do you think it is? I said, "I don't know. It sounds like two rocks being smashed together." And he agreed, and we were whispering back and forth, and the sound got closer and closer. Buddy Ian fell asleep in the tent to my right. Mitch being in the, I was kind of in the center. Mitch was close to the lake. He was still asleep, Ian. So Mitch and I were kind of talking back and forth, and then the clanking stopped, and we hear some what sounds like tree knocks, for better lack of better term, tree knocks.
Close to you or?
No, not super close. You know, we're talking 50, 60 yards away
okay.
is what I'm getting.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a little bit closer. It was hard to tell. They weren't super, they sound like tree knocks.
Sure, sure.
And I've said this before, I'd be lying, you know, if Bigfoot did not enter my head. But at the same time, I'm trying to rationalize it. Anyways, and then we hear somebody, what we thought were some footsteps. And I was trying to make out if it was bipedal, what was going on. It sounded bipedal to me. Mm-hmm. And my buddy Mitch really didn't have any comment on it then, other than, yeah, there's something out there.
Sure.
And then what seemed like an eternity, the clanking starts back up. And this thing walks away or takes off with that same sound. And that's it. Next morning, we wake up and we're talking about it, discussing between the three of us. Buddy Ian, who was passed out the whole night, never heard anything. Mitch and I had heard it. And we were talking back and forth going, hey, you know, was this an elk? What could it have been? It's not a person, in our opinion. You know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, dark. What could have done this? We try to rationalize it. Well, eventually, you know, we're there to fish. So we go out. We go hiking. We hiked into a couple of different lakes, went fishing, did well.
Yep.
Eventually, at the end of the day, we all come back to camp. And the same ritual, you know, start a fire. We cook food. We talk a little bit, and we go to bed. And I'll be damned, that 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, I hear that sound come back down towards us. And it's getting closer and closer. And this time it's much closer. And once again, my buddy Mitch and I are both awake, and we're going, hey, it's back. You know, and I said, yeah, it's back. What is it? You know, we're listening. And the clanking stops. And you start hearing something moving around. It sounds loud. It's moving back and forth. It sounds loud. Back and forth on the hill. We were kind of camped below this hill. Something's moving back and forth, and it's big. Whatever it is big. And not only is it big, it sounds, at the time, I couldn't tell, it sounded like it was mad. I couldn't tell if it was raking branches off of trees or if it was the steps on the ground that were causing it to make this big cracking noise. That stops. And we're laying there. It's kind of quiet. Nobody's talking. My buddy Ian is still asleep. And crack, crack, 5 times something would sound like hit a tree. So powerful, we could feel in our tent. I mean, I can remember laying back in my tent and going, oh my gosh, what? I mean, it echoed.
Right.
It must echo for miles. The most powerful knocks, it was like someone's blown a shotgun off right next to your ear that you just feel it in your body. This time, my buddy Ian's awake. He's going, what the bleep bleep is this? What's going on?
Right.
My buddy Mitch is awake, and he's going, oh my gosh, you know. Ball. So 5 good, powerful knocks. Buddy Ian's freaking out, and then it stops. And my heart was in my head. My heart was in my head.
Yeah.
That's all I could hear. Was, so if there was any vocals at that time, I couldn't tell you because my head was just doosh, doosh.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there wondering what's going to happen next. At least I was. My buddy Mitch, I'm sure, because he was whispering, going, yeah. you know, I could hear whispering. I couldn't tell what he was saying. And
it was probably praying or something.
Probably. I think I might have been praying too, quite possibly. Well, those powerful knocks stop, and all of a sudden you hear something come through the tree, but up high, and it hit the tree branches as it's coming down, and thud, and it lands, whatever it was, lands right next to my buddy's tent, Mitch, and he's the third one, he's furthest away from whatever this thing is, and closest to the lake, and I knew what it was. I mean, that sounded like a rock.
Right.
Hitting kind of the soft part of the lake, you know, where there's that mud meets, you know, the terrain meets the water. And he goes, oh my gosh, you know, that was a rock. I said, yeah, it's a rock. And so instantly in my head, I'm thinking, what the rose of rock? You know, I mean, this, I'm thinking Sasquatch, and I'm thinking we're in trouble because it's come back the second night in a row. Mm. It's even more, it's louder this time. It's closer.
Mm.
It's blowing stuff at us. It's beating a tree. My buddy Ian's freaking out to the right of me. And I'll back up a little bit. My buddy Mitch had mentioned that he had heard something off to his left. I had definitely heard something off to my right. So my thought was that there might have been two of whatever was there at least, because he was hearing something to his left and I was hearing something to my right. I know there was something to my right. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, because I only, at the end of the day, heard one thing leave. But it did kind of make some sense after the fact. But anyways, my buddy Ian's freaking out. This guy's from Boston. He's not a camper. He's never been really in the wild. He's freaking out, and we're armed, and he's ready to come out blasting. So I'm contemplating trying to figure out what's going on and going over to his tent because I'm afraid someone's going to get shot. And I'm thinking, I'm the closest to him. It's probably going to be me. So I unzip my tent, and I start peering out. And from behind a tree, and I was probably, I don't know how long I was peering out my tent, probably mere seconds, but I caught some movement behind a tree, and there's a trail. So it was, whatever it was kind of off the trail, but behind this large old growth pine. And what I saw was basically something. I could see a hand, an arm, a shoulder, and a head, and it was just moving back and forth behind this this tree, swaying almost. And I couldn't tell the time if it was watching me or what, but I could see it clearly. I mean, it was huge. It was big, monstrous. And in my head, I'm like, man, if they would exist, you know, I mean, wow. At the same time, I'm like, oh crap. I'm like, what are we gonna do? I'm sitting there in my tent looking at this thing, and I just sit there, and this thing just basically, and I can't even tell you how long it was probably, seemed like, I said, this whole thing seemed like an eternity, but it was probably mere seconds once again, but it peeled off the tree and went up the trail. I mean, it peeled off, almost like it pushed off the tree and turned its back and went up the trail, and that was it gone, and I sat there just watching it leave and see it walk too far out. It was fairly dark, and still the glow from our fire. Wasn't a super dark night. And then, yeah, I'm sitting there in my tent, and Ian had calmed down. Mitch, my buddy Mitch, he didn't have too much to say. But basically, I didn't say anything until much later on the road home. We didn't really talk about it. We packed up shortly thereafter and got out of there.
So your experience when you were driving home and nobody talked about it, that's pretty common from what I understand. But I bet you were thinking about it. I bet everyone was thinking about it, but it was just one of those things like, what the hell we just see? Like, what just happened? Am I right, or am I kind of putting words in your mouth?
No. I mean, that's it to a T. I mean, we got out of there for a reason. We knew, and this whole experience actually lasted pretty long.
Mm-hmm.
I really honestly can't tell you how long, because I know we laid in our tents for quite a while to make sure whatever it was left, and it did leave. But once we packed up, I mean, it was almost mutual. I mean, I don't think we even had to say anything. It was a mutual pack up to get that out of there.
Did you cut your trip short?
Oh, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, at least by a day, that was it. And, you know, anyways, but you're absolutely right. You know, on the way home, we did eventually talk about it, but it was just, you know, I think it was really trying to grasp, you know, especially for Mitch and I, buddy Ian, it probably blew his mind, because a bear could have came into camp or been around the area, would have blown his mind, and he would have been, well, I mean.
Just as scared.
You know the Boston area?
Yeah.
Guys, Boston, okay? A bear, he's not a camper. And so even a bear can be camped. He probably would have been, let's pack him and get out of here. I don't want to talk about it. But for Mitch and I, who had been camping together for a while now and experienced campers, we knew, well, I mean, specifically for me, since I'm the only one that saw what it was, but even Mitch didn't have to see it. He and then they knows what he was dealing with. Besides, that rock was a softball-sized rock, and those knocks and the behavior was something he's never experienced before and knows his animals. Likewise. So you're right. Some people go a whole lifetime without mentioning their encounter if they've had one, or don't talk about it whatsoever if they do. It's just to their, you know, their close-knit family. For me, I was interested in the subject beforehand. Now, the only difference was this particular trip, I was out fishing and was not out Bigfooting or looking for Bigfoot evidence. I was out with two buddies that were one kind of interested in the subject, the other doesn't care, didn't know anything about it. And it did launch me even more so into the subject. But it also gave me, it brought something to the table for me. One was, I wasn't out knocking on trees. I wasn't out yelling. This subject, this Sasquatch or Sasquatches found me. I didn't find them, and I was just of interest, or I had done something to make them mad or something, but they found me. I did not find them, but I had gone out to this area before or since and found subsequent possible evidence. Now that I know that Sasquatch does inhabit this area periodically or from time to time.
Let me ask you this question. Did you feel like, it doesn't sound like you were threatened. It sounds like to me that this thing or these things were, they looked at you as kind of a curiosity maybe. Maybe they wanted a reaction. You know, he was looking at you when you came out of the, could have been the female. But that's how I feel sometimes when these stories happen. It doesn't seem so much like get out of here behavior. I mean, the screams and the chest beating, yeah, I get that. But it seems more or less, hey, let's throw these rocks and elicit a response and see whatever these things are do. Because they seem curious. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think they were curious. Now, I will say, We on our trip down there, we got lost, right? We hiked 17 miles. We were actually in high country. We were in parts kind of overlooking our campsite, and we didn't know it. We found plenty of signs of bear beds and stuff. Looking back on the incident, I have to wonder, I didn't mention this during because I was trying to keep it short, but my buddy Ian, who was afraid of bears, he brought a pot and pan. And up there in the high mountains, he was smashing his pan around so much so that it was ticking me off. I said, dude, knock it off. We're armed. There's bears more afraid of you. Just talk, and if they hear you, they'll chew off. Did we tick something off on a hill? Did we find an area where they were bedding down? And this is just hypothetically speaking, of course, and also, but I've had a lot of time to think about this. Not many people have a two-night or two-day experience. I'm very fortunate, and I don't know why. And I have to wonder, did we get close to something that they wanted to check us out two nights in a row because we came up to their area and sat down and peed and everything else because, you know, being male hiking, well, we have to urinate and we leave our stand. And so they could probably track us very easily and probably watching us the whole time. Came back two nights in a row, not necessarily trying to scare us off, which they may have been trying to do, but maybe very curious. But I'll tell you what, if you had heard the rock thing coming into camp was scary, but those knocks, there's no sleeping once you hear those knocks. So they were either trying to wake us up, or it was trying to wake us up, or it was trying to scare us off. Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe get out of your pants. I'm here. You came into my house, so show yourself.
Show yourself. Exactly. So what from that experience did you learn that you kind of take forward now when you're in the field? Because I had asked you, and actually you volunteered this because there's some research things you wanted to talk about. Which I love because you guys are always so proactive. Is there anything in that experience that you take forward going with you to research? And then kind of expand on that about some other research thoughts and ideas that, you know, that you have. So I'll let you go with that.
Great question. No, that's a great question because I absolutely 100% took away, not right away. It took some time thinking about it, unfortunately for me, but what I took away from that initial encounter after being at this so long, sweeping up and down California, Yosemite, and never finding anything, some interesting encounters and reports, then moving up to Oregon and having this encounter after living there for 4 years. What I took away was be a camper. When you're out, if you're out Bigfooting or Sasquatching and you're in the field if you're just looking for evidence and going out for a day trip, I'll get to that in a second. But if you're actually going out for a couple of days camping, act like a camper, be obnoxious, make yourself noticeable. If you want to have this encounter, possibly, Sasquatch is there. Do a lot of hiking, make yourself known. What I take back is, I look back at what we had done.
Mm-hmm.
We went fishing, we were loud, we laughed, we urinated everywhere.
Right.
Because we drank a lot of water. We were hiking, we were loud, there were a couple of guys having a great time out there, and we did a lot of, we exposed ourselves, and we came back to our camp, and we were obnoxious there, we were having a good time. So what I take back from that is Sasquatch, if they're in the area, will find you. You won't find them. But if they're in an area and you are of interest, they may look at you and check you out a little bit. So what I'm getting at is I'm not a big fan of going out in the woods and knocking on trees. I'm not a big fan of making yells or calls. You don't know what you're doing. You know. I will do that stuff if I'm on an expedition or a trip or and it's the last day and I've had no action, nothing. I will do that. Say I got nothing else to lose. Why not?
Right.
Let's try it. I have had results from stuff like that before. But at the end of the day, it's not my go-to. I like to make myself known. And I like to pay attention, melt in with the woods, you know, like you're a hunter.
Right.
You know, I do. Feel the woods, be a part of the woods. If you're in the woods long enough, you'll start to hear sounds you've never heard before.
It usually takes me, when I go out in the woods, it takes me about a half a day to clear the static and really get everything out of your head. And then you start noticing sounds you hadn't noticed. Or when I go on a hunt, if I'm sitting there, it takes me a good 2 hours of calm sitting in the brush blind or whatever before I start.
Compression.
What's that?
Compression.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's just one of those things. So I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, but that's exactly right. And I think that's, you know, something you should do every time you're in the woods. Whether you're looking for Bigfoot or doing research or not, is one, it's a stress reliever. Mm. Two, you'll get to hear sounds you don't normally get to hear. And three, animals pick up on your intensity, your motive. This is their environment. It's like I'm in my house and somebody knocked down my door, and I instantly know they got evil intentions because you don't knock my – I didn't get a knock. You just straight knock my door down. Animals get the same feeling when you're in the woods. They know your intentions when you're there. So, and you're going in the woods and you'll hear noises and stuff, and all of a sudden, you're in a bad mood or whatever, and animals pick up on that. And then you also won't have the luxury of hearing some amazing sounds or maybe possible dangers around you. So decompression's huge.
Now, do you prefer looking around at night versus day, or does it matter to you?
Okay, that preferably if you're looking for evidence. Nighttime's not it. I mean, unless you've been out with a therm and you're in an area you think you got a chance. Therm is awesome. Thermal use is awesome. That's the only reason to be out at night other than recording sounds.
Okay.
You're not going to find evidence at night. So during the day is my favorite time to be looking for evidence. Now, to record possible evidence at night, thermal and audio. The best times for me, that's where I've got my best luck, both on therm and with audio pieces.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best time to be doing that, whether you stay out there or not. I do sometimes with audio and, well, with therm I do obviously, but with audio sometimes I'll just place and come back the next day and pick it up. So, but defining tracks and hair and all that, if you're going out for a possible experience or encounter, I think nighttime, because I do think Sasquatch spend a lot of their time doing activities at night. It doesn't make them primarily nocturnal.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're valuable by nature, but at the same time, looking for physical evidence, daytime, and recording evidence, such as thermal and audio, it's at night. And I do like to go out at night a lot, but I'm not going in and out. I like to camp for multiple nights.
Sure. Speaking of camping and being outdoors, somebody at work asked me what'd you learn the most? What was your big takeaway from all of it? And believe it or not, it's safety. That was the number one thing, because you can't do it again if you don't get out alive. And when you guys went through the training, you did your half hour thing on what to pack and this sort of thing. And I've been going in the woods a lot, and I do typically all of those things, but doubling up on some of those things I didn't think about. Talk about the criticality of safety, man, because I feel like there are just people going out there to squatch, and they'll go even just 2 miles into the woods, but it doesn't take but a second to get lost. Talk about that, because there's people who are literally amateurs who I think are kind of living on the edge, and they shouldn't be.
That another great question, David. And let me tell you, you were the weekend that you came out to the OP. There was two missing kids. Yep. I mean young men, very fit, agile. Thought they were prepared. They're missing. They're still missing. I just got back from a trip with James Milling and Derek Randall, where we were looking for one of them, and we spent 2 days out in the woods looking for one of the kids. and literally a stone's throw away, well, not a stone's throw away, but close enough to where our hub is, our home base where you camped at, David.
Mm-hmm.
He was that close and he's missing. We hiked miles and miles and miles and miles and didn't find a trace of him or anybody. I mean, there was no trace of humans in this area, which was really cool. At the same time, we knew we were looking for a needle in a haystack. And anyways, the importance, oh my gosh, it's critical. Now, to bring this into Bigfoot research, it's critical.
Right.
It's critical. If you are going out to the woods and you're not prepared, you're not doing the research, you're not doing yourself, anybody else, you're not doing the subject of Bigfoot any service, because there's too many things that could happen. And you could, if you go out to the woods and aren't prepared, you're preparing for disaster, and the possibilities of hurting yourself are endless. So what we like to teach is, you know, obviously, and some of it's obvious, but a lot of people just don't think about it, or they do and they don't do it. And that's unfortunate, but always, always, always tell somebody where you're going. Have a plan. Have a map. Know the area you're going to. Know the area you're going to. I think that's huge. You know the ins and the outs. Tell somebody where you're going to park your car, the time you're going to be back.
Right.
You know, GPS is great.
That's probably also the most critical thing, because right, even if you walk out and you forget a light, you forget, you know, a plastic shelter, you forget these other things, you know for sure that you say to your wife, if don't call you by 8, send somebody. They'll know where your car is at least. I think you're right. That is the most critical thing. Tell somebody. I don't know. Go ahead, man. I just kind of, like I said.
Absolutely, because at the end of the day, you can be as prepared as I am or any, a lot of these other professionals out there. Not that I'm a professional, but what I'm saying is somebody that's really prepared. And you don't tell somebody where you're going or the time you're going to be back, you've given yourself no shot whatsoever.
I had been lost one time. It was about, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. There was I was going up to Mount Major, overlooking Lake Winnipesaukee, and I remember I get to the top, and I wasn't using snowshoes or anything like that, and maybe I should have been, but I get to the top, and I've hiked this before, and as I'm coming down, the trail is covered by snow. I don't recognize landmarks. There's snow everywhere. And by this point, I'd gotten to the point where I couldn't go back, because I came up a very steep, slippery, you know, almost like an ice waterfall that I had to go around. There was no way I was making it down. And so I started to go what I thought was around the back way of the mountain, and it's only about a 2-mile hike up and down. It's not huge. But it was on a Wednesday or a Thursday. No one was up there but me. It's starting to get dark, and I realized I do not know where the hell I am. And the trail I normally followed around the back of that mountain was obscured, so I had to make my best guesstimate. I can tell you, Shane, that feeling in your pit of your stomach when you think you're lost is like nothing else you can experience, because you feel like, oh, crap, I'm lost. It's dark. I don't have a lighter. I didn't even bring gloves with me. I did everything stupid that you can do. Fortunately, by the grace of God, I found my way out, and it took me about and last light is when I got out to the trailhead there. But man, I'll tell you what, and people don't realize, you go out there Bigfooting or whatever it is you're doing, as soon as you think you're lost, even if you're not really, and you got to take time to take stock of what it is, you can expand on this more than I can, but you don't want to feel that feeling at all.
No, you don't. And it's the same. I'll tell you what, that feeling is the same feeling as the feeling you think you're when you're about to die. You get stuck in a situation.
Yeah.
And you think, I'm gonna die. The same feeling, because you're lost. It's the same feeling. I felt it. I felt the I'm about to die feeling a couple of times now. But the lost feeling, the Mount Hood experience was the perfect example. The only fortunate thing was I was with two other individuals. But yeah, absolutely. It's a, you know, and that's why telling somebody where you're going and having a plan. Derek Randall talked about this. It's like a flight plan. Before, you know, pilots already, when they get in the plane, there's a flight plan. There's point A, point B, and everything's checked out. They have their own things to check out and blah, blah, blah. You got to make your trip out to the woods the same sort of thing. You might be, oh, I'm only going 1 or 2 out. Doesn't matter.
Yep.
That's where most people go missing.
Yep.
That's where most people go missing. It's, you know, most accidents you know, car accidents happen 5 minutes from home. Well, most people go missing right off the freaking trail. It's actually unbelievable how many people go missing just right off a trail.
Sure.
So, or they're next to somebody and they're, you know, things happen. So prepare. Pack two of everything, I always say.
Yep.
Now, nowadays, you can have everything's so light. So, have a sleeping bag, obviously, and a good tent and a good sleeping bag, but pack two fire starters, pack an extra set of clothing, two ways that, you know, pack water, bring a life straw.
Yep.
That's
yep.
Two knives. You lose one knife, you have another. You know, I like to put a knife in my pack, two knives in my pack, and a knife in my pants. So I instantly draw it out. You know, I two of everything is huge, a huge thing, you know. And pack for the weather. Look at the weather. Don't just go out, I'm going to go out for a hike and not look at the weather.
Sure.
I think it's ridiculous because in many parts of the country, especially the Olympics, weather can change in 10 minutes, you know. And at certain times of year, you can go from sun to snow in no time.
Right.
And you're in trouble. So, don't take and then to get back to the research aspect of it all. If you're not doing these steps, you're not going out there with a clear mind. If you get lost, there goes your research. It's out the window. So the more prepared you are to survive and the more prepared you are in knowing the area that you're researching in, the better your research is going to be, the more clear your mind is going to be, and the more focused you're going to be.
Okay.
So these are key elements to effective Bigfoot research. And this is something that I've learned along the way and something the Olympic Project, as a citizen scientist, I have learned over time, and that's why I think it's important to relay this on to other individuals that want to take this subject and this research serious.
Sure. All right, let's do this, because there are some sounds that you had sent me. And this is a surprise to the audience. They're going to love this, because we get the squatchy sounds, you know. But and you're actually good about not letting me go there, because to me, everything in the woods is Sasquatch. I'm like you and David and... you know, Chris, pull me back from that. It's good. But we're going to play some sounds that you had given me. We're going to A-B them. The first one is going to be the one of the gorilla chest slapping, right? And so this is audio that was recorded of a gorilla. This is what they actually do. And then we're going to compare that to the sound that you had emailed me from a research area that you go to. Now, I don't know who recorded it from the OP. Point is, we have it, so that's great. So let's go ahead and play the first one. You can tell me kind of why it is, what it is, why we're listening to that, and we'll play the second one and talk about the similarities. So, all right, let's cue the first one, and we'll get right back to it. All right, so Shane, you just heard that. To me, it's slapping. It sounds like a hollow chest kind of thing. Did you run this on Sonic Visualizer at all to take a look at the signature, or is this something you guys are kind of – we just got to go by what we hear right now?
Yeah, so this was something I had recorded while camping in an area of the Olympics, an area of interest that we've had possible activity before. And though I had been camping in this area and had placed a recorder – 30, 40 yards away, I never had heard this in person, but it was recorded. And there was some other tidbits to this recording, like some snaps and blah, blah. Anyways, I recorded this in the Olympics. And so, yes, I did look at it on Sonic Visualizer, and I sent it off to David Ellis of the Olympic Project,
yeah.
Who is a past guest on your show,
right, yeah.
and known for his work on sound and audio and looking at it visually, which is key, because if you look at something visually, your ears play tricks on you. It's much better to look at it with your eyes, and Sonic Visualizer, looking at a sound or whatnot visually, is the way to go. So you have two forms. You're listening to it and you're seeing it. And so when I send it to David Ellis, he's like, whoa, this is interesting because I have recordings similar to this. And though I looked at it visually via Sonic Visualizer, I didn't comprehend what David was about to send to me, because initially it was an interesting sound. It did sound like a chest slap, but I didn't want to call it that because I wanted to look at it, compare it to owl wings,
sure.
A bear shaking its coat, every little thing I could think of. When I sent it to David Ellis, he compared it to what you're about to hear is visually speaking, is so close to a to the original thing that you just played, David. It's so close visually. There are some minor differences, but it's almost exactly the same signature. And David Ellis has recorded this sound and has been sent similar sounds from other areas of interest. So visually speaking, not in hearing this, not only does it sound like a chest flap, it looks like a gorilla chest flap.
Okay.
Do we have gorillas roaming the Olympic National Forest? I don't think so, but I do think we have Sasquatch, and this is a possibility.
Okay, so let's that's great to cue us into this. I'll go ahead and play the second sound. This is the one that you had recorded in your super secret area, which I totally get. So we'll go ahead and play it right now. Yeah, those two sound so amazingly similar, and unless I'm wrong, it's about the same cadence and number of slaps. There's a difference. It's not the same audio, but I do notice, and I went and did a little research on this, that gorillas will basically slap the same way the same number of times. Now, I'm not saying whatever it was, squatch, not a squatch, the same thing, but I'm saying the characteristics are amazing. And to me, that was kind of a jaw dropper because it's like, man, they got this out in the Pacific Northwest. Really? You know what I mean? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Okay. Well, you pretty much exactly said what I would say is that I'm not calling this a Sasquatch. What I'm saying is that this is past the area of, I don't know, this is interesting. And then we put it into the interesting file and we get more recordings like this, which we have now. So we have a comparison. We have a known comparison, a gorilla, and then we have these unknowns that we compare it at. You know, we have the Macaulay Library of Sound, so we can compare this sound to a lot of known things. And it doesn't match up visually to, you know, maybe some of the listeners will hear this go, oh, I think that's this or I think it's that. Well, I've compared it to so many knowns. It doesn't match visually, and quite honestly, it sounds more like a gorilla chest slap than it does anything else. And I've compared it to a lot of sounds, and so has David Ellis. So, but I'm not saying it's a Sasquatch. What I'm saying is it's of interest, but it's in an area where there's been sightings. We've had possible other activity, and David may or may not know this, but he was in the general vicinity on one of these expeditions, or last expedition, of this recorded sound. So sorry to tell you that, David. I hope
I was? You can... Nice. Hey, listen, there was a sound, and I talked about this with David, and that's going to air because there's those vocalizations that he got, the early morning ones, which were absolutely amazing. But we were sitting around the fire, and there was a group of us, and I think Cindy Cuddell heard a wood knock, and you go, what was that? And man, didn't we hear a short howling whoop, kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but it was what, like 3 seconds maybe? And it was very short and then cut off. And what was weird is bears definitely don't make that sound. I know elk don't, deer don't. And it was from an area we had just come up that fire road right for the where the clear cut is down below. And where that came from had to have been in that really thick area. And I'm thinking, if that's not what I think it might be, I'm trying to be objective here, who the hell else could have been there? And I know that was the same area where you got those figures coming right out of that wood line. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Because I'll tell you what, Shane, that one experience, that one whoop and the wood knock, that made the 7-hour, the 6-hour flight and the 3-hour drive worth it. So anyway, go ahead and talk about what you guys seen in that specific area.
Yeah. So first of all, it was a pleasure having you out there, David. Your joy to camp with, and I know we're playing something down the road here, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
but
sure.
So that same area that we were camping in is the same area that I got that possible chest slap, or at least that sound. That's the same area that Derek Randles and I had recorded some decent therm of something or two individuals, and we've had multiple recordings from that area, including the night that you and I and Cindy Cadell and a few others were camping in this area, where Cindy heard a knock, we did not. But you and I had heard this unusual sound.
Everyone else was talking, and man, I was like, that's clear as day. How could you not hear it? I think Todd Hale, who was there, was also talking with Cindy, and it was between a sentence. And because I wasn't listening to them, my head was turned, my ear clued in on it. And I looked at you, and you're like, what? What just happened?
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. And we described it the same, which was cool because it was there was a reference there in collaboration on what we had heard. And we both got the same direction down, which you're right. There that call came from was in the thick of it. It's off the beaten trail, and it was not a bear. It was not an elk. Wasn't a coyote. It was odd. And then
was too deep to be an owl. There's no way. The way it cut off and the way – man, maybe I'm talking myself into things, but it was definitely any owl that I've ever heard, unless an owl just went octave way down.
Right. It's a simple way to put it is, we didn't see what made that vocal.
Right.
But what's interesting is neither one of us recognized it. David Ellis, who's looked at it since, it's an unknown, and we put it into the interesting pile and the unknown, and we compare it to other. Unknowns and knowns, but being out in that area, and I spent a lot of time in that area, that was what I like to call, you know, it's an unknown, and I do put it in the interesting file because it's kind of what I assume Sasquatch may do based on the many times I've been out there in that area. It's such an interesting little area.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on there. And so, it was interesting recording, and I can't wait for David to share that on the show because there's a lot to be said about that.
That howl at 2:50 a.m. was – that'd give you shivers, man. That was – because that was way up in the hills. That was – he estimates at least a mile out on that.
Yeah,
and,
that's accurate. That it was – and but a mile out for a Sasquatch – is you can cover that in no time, I would imagine.
Yeah, no. I mean, and just think of lung capacity to be able to project that. But so we are, man. I could go on for another 2 hours, but I got to bring Chris on. He's doing a little bit from Alaska, just like sending sounds or whatever. But he's having a great time out there. He's in Squatch Country. I'm so jealous. But he'll be with us in at Mountain Hood. I think we're going to do October, and hopefully we can bring some recordings back from that. But I wanted to give you a minute to talk about Monster X because you and Gunnar are the guys bringing that show every week. I'd like my audience, they probably already know about the show, but for those that don't, fill us in, give us the date and time, what you guys are doing. Floor is yours.
All right. Well, yeah, Gunnar Monson and I, Gunnar Monson, obviously, some of you don't know this, but he is the founder and owner of Sasquatch Coffee. The slogan is, have you tried it, Yeti? Which
I didn't know that. Sorry.
Yeah. Have you tried it, Yeti? So, but Gunnar Monson and I do a podcast called Monster X Radio. We've been at it for several years now, and we've interviewed just about everybody that's well known. We love to interview those that are lesser known, and we love to interview encounters. Now, when it comes to encounters, we're a little bit picky. We like to make sure that there's we can believe them. You know, I've been interviewing people for years and years, so has Gunnar. And so we don't just let anybody come on there and tell their encounter. It has to feel right. It has to sound right. And I don't mean that I'm the justice of peace. Like, I get to pick what's right and wrong. But I think nowadays with the shows like Finding Bigfoot, which I love, and those guys are my friends, that a lot of people are just seeking fame and fortune or 50 minutes to – anyways. With Monster X Radio, we're really about the science of things. We love, much like what you're doing, David, because you have a fantastic show, and it's great quality. One of the better shows out there, bar none. Monster X Radio, we strive on bringing people factual stuff or, things that we find interesting ourselves. It's not a we're not going to be the most popular show out there. We're not going to be the most rated show out there because we're mainly talking about Sasquatch, and some of it can be kind of boring. But guess what? Bigfoot research is boring. If you're really serious about Bigfoot research, it's boring. But you can take away a lot from our show, and that's our goal is to people. We want people to enjoy it. At the same time, we want to be factual. We're not sitting around a campfire telling a horror story.
Sure.
I mean, sometimes, but 99% of the time, it's going to be kind of a scientific show.
Sure.
It's going to be a factual show. It's going to be interesting. So that's our goal of the show. We want people to tune in, and we want feedback. You know, there's always room for improvement, and we know that. We're our biggest critic.
And when do you guys air? Now, you're on Blog Talk Radio. I know you can get the post stuff on YouTube and iTunes and stuff, but when do you air if people wanted to tune in live?
We're also on YouTube. We're up all over the place. But, yes, 4 p.m. Pacific time and 7 p.m. Eastern time. You can find us on Sunday evenings in Monsters Radio. We have a website, monstersradio.com, that we're still working on, but it's open. Please join us on there, and there'll be a blog post and certain things that won't be shared on Facebook. And we do have a Facebook page, you know, Monsters Radio.
Sure.
So,
all right, nice. Well, listen, brother, like I said, I could go on for another 2 hours on this, but I got to make room for Chris. We got to get out of here. Thanks for your time. I am so stoked about all this. I can't wait to get out there in October. I'm making sure I'm in good hiking shape so I can hump that backpack up and down the hills, keep up with you and Chris. But yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to it. I'll bring my recorder and, my common sense, and hopefully we get something. So, yeah, that's all I had, unless you had anything else.
No, I'm just looking forward to having you out here in October. I'll send you some stuff. It's going to be a heck of a trip. It's going to be a trip that you're never going to forget. I'll put it that way. You're never going to forget, regardless of any possible activity. It's a trip you're never going to forget. And I'm looking forward to having you out, and I appreciate you having me on the show, David. I really do.
No problem, my man. So, I think that's it. Over and out, and we'll have you on again sometime.
Hey, appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks so much again for hanging out. Thanks, Chris and Shane, for the great interviews. Thanks for the field report, Chris. Thanks for the reports and the sounds as well, Shane. So on the way out of here, I will play both of those together. We'll loop them. The first one will be the known gorilla. The other one will be the suspicious sound. I'll play those back and forth. So one to the other. Hopefully you enjoy them. My name is Dave. This has been Bigfoot Ground Zero. Until next time. Over and out.
chum, 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 chum,